This is the Pick of the Bunch by Basic Bananas, where we share the pick of the bunch when it comes to marketing, business, and people. Welcome back to the Pick of the Bunch. This is Christo here. A very exciting episode I have for you here. I sat down with Dr. DeMartini, Dr. John DeMartini. If you don't know who he is, he's worked with a lot of high-level people all over planet Earth, helping them to achieve more in life, be more fulfilled in life, attract more wealth in life. He's shared the stage with other humans like Sir Richard Branson, Stephen Covey, Wayne Dyer, and Deepak Chopra, just to name a few. He's presented in over 60 countries around planet Earth, sharing his wisdom. This guy has a brain the size of, well, the size of something very big. Very impressive, the knowledge that he shares in this episode. The theme of the episode, which I was digging around with Dr. DeMartini here, is around being more fulfilled in life. So through our businesses, how we can, and everything basically, we can become more fulfilled, how we can attract more wealth into our lives, and also break through barriers. Like if we have nervous situations or things where we have that kind of self-talk, the self-doubt, how we get through that. He shares, and what he shares is really interesting. You'll really enjoy the his perspective and his take on these things as I presented them to him. Also, I got him to share a bit around gratitude and how he does. It's an exciting part. Right at the very end, he shares his process for gratitude and basically practicing gratitude. So really something really interesting there as well. An amazing human, is very driven, has a really clear purpose in life. So really inspiring just to be around. Kind of felt nice to be in the room with him and to interview Dr. DeMartini. So super excited to share this episode with you. Enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Dr. DeMartini.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me here. Just to give a little insight to our listeners, what do you think? The number of books you've written, you just kind of blew my mind a moment ago with one, or something you're working on behind the scenes at the moment around the history of the universe. And I wonder, how many books have you written in total, do you think?
Probably the equivalent of nearly 300.
300 books.
But most of them are, the ones that most people will know about are the kind of self-help books that are out on the market. There's about 40 of those.
A lot
of the other ones are conferences, programs that I do that are not public domain. And like the one I just showed you, which is a 600-page textbook on astrophysics.
there we go.
Not everybody's interested in that in the business world.
Dr. DeMartini just blew my mind behind the scenes, in case you're wondering what's been going on here. What about, how many books do you think you've, I think this could be an impossible question now, like how many questions, books do you think you've studied that you've read or?
I actually have a document and it's, as of today, 30,151.
30,151. Wow. Okay. So we've got a lot of knowledge here on the show today, people. Amazing. And thanks so much for joining us here. The topic today, which we were looking at, is around fulfillment, how to be more fulfilled in life, which could relate also to, I guess, one thing I wanted to touch on was breaking through barriers. So a lot of us as business owners have those fears or the moments or little doubts inside our head. I have a little voice that tries to get in the way when I'm doing amazing things. It even gets in the way when I try and go and exercise. You know, it's like, oh, dude, you've earned a morning off. You know, so chatting around fulfillment, maybe breaking through barriers and if that can relate in some ways, you know, obviously you've got a lot of knowledge around this, so see how we roll, but also around just increasing revenue or profit, basically attracting wealth. It obviously is a topic of interest to a lot of humans. So
if I'm in error here, let me know, but I'm hearing that you would like me to discuss what is it that causes the negative self-talk?
Yes.
The fears that hold people back?
Absolutely.
And the second is something to do with money building.
Yeah, that would be great. Sounds good.
So can I develop that?
Absolutely, please.
Every individual has a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most important to least important in their life at any one moment in their life they're living by. This is called the hierarchy of their values, or the value structure that they live by. Now, whatever is highest on that value list, which is unique to them, like a fingerprint, they're spontaneously inspired from within to fulfill it. It's an intrinsic value that calls them into action that requires no external motivation or incentive or motives or remindings to do. So in my case, it's learning and teaching. Mm-hmm. Maybe to a guy who loves video games, it may be playing video games. Mm-hmm. As you go down the list of the hierarchy of values, the lower you go, the more extrinsic they become. And the more you require motivation and reminding and incentives externally to get you to do them. Mm-hmm. Now, anytime you attempt to set a goal that is congruent and aligned with your highest value, mm-hmm. you have the highest probability of achieving it.
Gotcha.
And anytime you set a goal that's lower on the value, you lower that probability. Now, why would somebody set goals lower on their values? Well, one, they're not clear about what their values are. Mm-hmm. And that's usually because of the herd instinct. They're bombarded by injected values from other people and projected values from other people. And so they'll subordinate. So anytime you subordinate to somebody else and put them on a pedestal and think they're more intelligent, more successful, more financially viable, a better stable relationship, more socially influential, more physically fit or physical, mm-hmm. More spiritually inspired or something. Anytime you minimize yourself and exaggerate them mm-hmm. and live in their shadows instead of their shoulders, you will inject some of those values and they'll infiltrate your thinking and they'll distract you from what's truly most important to you, that's called, that's intuitive. And you'll attempt to be somebody you're not. Just like if you've been infatuated with a good woman or a man, mm-hmm. you'll very commonly sacrifice things that are truly most important to you to try to fit in with them for fear of loss of them while you're infatuated only. Once you end up resenting them, you don't mind peeing them off. But initially, while you're infatuated, you'll sacrifice things that are important to you. Mm. And they say that a woman's memory of every sacrifice she's done for men is greater than all Intel chip
computers. I was going to say, yes,
Now, when somebody subordinates to somebody else and injects their values and tries to set goals that are not theirs, mm-hmm. the fulfillment level will go down. The drive and success level will go down. Instead of walking or talk, they'll be limping their life. Mm-hmm. The unfulfillment that occurs will take them out of living in their executive center. Because when you live by your highest values, you go into the executive center. Your blood, glucose, and oxygen is awakened in the executive center, where inspired vision, strategic mm-hmm. planning, executing plans, and self-governance live. Mm-hmm. When you go out of that and you live by lower values, you get into your amygdala. And there you want to avoid pain and seek pleasure. Now, with that occurring, instead of becoming objective and reasonable and foresighted and planning and strategically planning with foresight, you end up more ad hoc, impulsively, instinctively reacting, not acting. Mm-hmm. When you do, it's very common that you can set goals that one are not aligned to your values or two that are more impulsive to pleasure and trying to avoid pain, and you won't strategically plan to mitigate the fantasies that you're pursuing. And you're normally, as a result of that, having an internal dialogue whispering to you as a negative self-talk to let you know you're not being authentic mm-hmm. and that you're setting up a fantasy in order to make sure you think out the downsides to make sure you have contingency plans to mitigate the risks. Mm-hmm. So the negative self-talk, which some positive thinking people think you're supposed to get rid of, is actually a feedback mechanism to let you know that you're pursuing fantasies that haven't done due diligence and that you're not really doing plans that are thought through, that really meet market needs and really understand all the pros and cons and all the costs that are involved. Once you do your proper due diligence, and you strategically plan, which is the purpose of dissolving fantasies into objective goals, the self-talk goes down. So negative self-talk is not a bad thing. It's not something to get rid of.
Yeah.
It's something to listen to let you know that you're pursuing something that's not congruent with who you are or your highest values, or is somewhat in a fantasia, subjective bias fantasia, and you're needing that negative feedback to guide you to set real goals, which is the purpose of the executive center's strategic planning. Mm-hmm. Because strategic planning, the purpose of it is to think of everything that can go down and wrong, and what are you going to do to prevent it or to deal with it? And to have that plan. When you do, if you've got them all done, you don't have negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. You have a contingency plan.
Okay, so the plan's clear.
You know what
enough.
You're going to do.
You know what you want to achieve.
And you know what you're going to do, and you're realistic, and you're not elated. I just got interviewed just a moment ago by the ABC on if all of a sudden you're elated and infatuated and fantasizing about a job opportunity or a career opportunity or a big deal, and you're extroverted and you're bragging about it, if you wonder why it disappears, it's because you're not in a competency range. If you're elated with it, that means you're not really seeing both sides of it. You're not really prepared to manage it. That's why it disappears from your life.
Yeah, right.
So by
like
having
the stock market going up and everyone gets elated.
You get elated, you get extroverted, you brag about something that's not even sold yet.
Yeah.
And so in the process of doing it, that's a sign you haven't got a balanced orientation. Because if you really knew the responsibilities that came with that sale, you would just be grateful, not elated.
Yes.
Elation means that it's just like an infatuation. You're not aware of the downsides that you're going to face along that journey.
Interesting. What do you think, like how do you – so let's say – it's someone in business and they want to set up a partnership with another organization and they're nervous as hell to ask this person, hey, you know, you want to team up with us or you want to become, I don't know, a referral partner or form an alliance or ask for a big sale, you know, and then they're nervous as hell, like the self-talk or whatever starting to chirp up, giving them doubt. What do they do? Like if it's that situation in that timing, is there anything advice you could give as a trigger, or is it just they need to do the pre-work before to make, you know, get the end goal so that when you hit these hurdles, you're just like...
Well, if they're having a hurdle because of intimidation, is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Well, just like, I guess, what do you call it, like doubt or...
Well, let me address intimidation. Intimidation is nothing more than an assumption that you're making that the person sitting in front of you has some accomplishment or skill that you don't. You're thinking they're smarter than you. You're thinking they're more successful than you. You think they have more wealth than you. And as a result of it, you're minimizing yourself. And whenever you minimize yourself, you'll be worried and preoccupied with yourself instead of the objective. And so what I do is I tell people, identify in advance what intimidating factors these people may have. And what is the fear of loss? Because you only fear the loss of things you infatuate with. And go in there and find out the downsides of them and find out where you have those behaviors or traits or actions in your own life quantitatively and qualitatively equal. Once you do, there's no intimidation. I have people, sometimes executives, they're frightened of speaking. And I sit down and I imagine them close their eyes and they imagine all the people they're speaking to. And they don't have a fear of speaking to in kindergarten class. They don't have a fear of speaking to a high school class.
Yeah.
But they get a fear of speaking to anybody that they perceive has something they don't. So once we identify who that is and what that is, we can identify where they have it in their own form and what's the downsides of them having it, what's the upsides of your having it, neutralize it, and they can have no fear about speaking. And they're not preoccupied with now the fear of rejection or preoccupied with what they're doing. They're just focusing on the objective. Another thing is to make sure that you've done your due diligence. If you know your material and you're not stepping out of your core competence and you're not trying to sell something you don't really know or believe in, and you're sticking to something you can absolutely have certainty on, whoever has the most certainty usually wins the game. So they're the ones that have the command. So if you're not really prepared, you're failing in advance because you're not doing your due diligence. So if you're about to do a presentation, it's wiser to anticipate all those things and prepare for it. If you can imagine all of the obstacles that they have in advance, you're the one that had. If you're not talking in their values, you're not considering their needs, you're not asking questions, you're not prepared with the obstacle responses, then you're guaranteed to have a setback in that. And these obstacles are not just random obstacles. They're very specific obstacles giving you feedback on your procedure of approaching it.
Oh, very powerful. Yeah. Awesome. It's amazing the insight there you've just given me too, thinking, racking my brain, thinking of all these situations, like too true, like absolutely true. And just looking at them as, well, it is a human, isn't it? If you're looking at somebody that's perceived as a nervous situation, you're kind of minimizing yourself.
Yeah, because you don't have, if you're a public speaker, if they're standing in front of a kindergarten class and there's nobody there that they think has more knowledge than them.
Powerful, won't they? They'll be like a lion in there.
They don't have a fear of speaking. But the second you put them in front of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and people that are a higher magnitude of intelligence, Charlie Munger, who's very polymathic, you might then all of a sudden, if you're stepping over your competence zone, you're probably going to be hesitant. I learned that many years ago. I had the opportunity to present a very prestigious 1,000 oncologist on cancer research. Back when I was in my 24 years old, I had to do a presentation in front of 1,000 oncologists. And I made sure that I read 400 books on oncology before I prepared, before I came there. And I devoured that literature.
Yeah.
And all the people that were in the front row were the people that wrote the books.
Wow.
So I made sure I knew those books inside and out.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a problem once I got prepared.
Yeah.
But to go up there ad hoc means that you're not really caring about your objective.
Yeah.
The people who care about their objective will prepare.
Yeah. You've just maybe had a little insight there too, actually, where I always say we have a team that facilitate marketing workshops, a lot of public speaking, and I always say, you've got to have 10 times the content you're going to deliver. That's just one way we put it, so that you're well beyond prepared. And just another little take out that I've taken from this, just as you were talking then, there's times where if you're not prepared, I think that's when you kick yourself the most as well. So like afterwards, if it didn't go well, whereas there have been times where I've been very prepared, and even if it didn't go well or didn't whatever, you know, work out or something, whatever the situation. An example of this, just that really kind of, I used to compete on the world surfing circuit for 9 years of my life. That was like my career and my sole purpose. And if I went to an event and I competed, that was the meaning of life, was at the next event always. That was the sole purpose, basically, do well in the next event. And if I didn't prepare and follow like my own preparation plans and I lost, I'd kick myself. Like I still even have some memories now where I'm like, damn, that event in South Africa or that one in, you know, in Indonesia, and because I wasn't, but when I was prepared and I did my best and it didn't get through, it was like, you know what? I was happy. I was kind of felt content.
You afterwards. Knew you did what the procedures that worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm a surfer too, so I understand.
Yeah. I am very cool. Oh, we have to go for a surf sometime. There we go. Now, in terms of just like making money and things, because this would lead into a bit of wealth question. I actually read your book around, when was that? It was probably around 2009, How to Make One Hell of a Profit and Still Get to Heaven. And I do all right with money. I think I'm pretty good with it. People tend to look at it and think, you know, pretty successful and so on, and with a business, and we have a team of 33 staff and a great business and all this stuff. And however, and I'll say this isn't just to like kiss your butt because we're face to face. It was probably, well, I'd say it's the best book I've read about wealth creation because it wasn't, I could relate to it, I could connect to it, and it had practical things to do in the book. It wasn't like you have to be a, whatever you call it, you know, high-end financial investor, you know, the exclusive, you know, as if you're trading millions, which a lot of other investment or wealth creation books and things that I couldn't even connect with. And I thought it related to all areas. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, I have to do real estate or I have to do, you know, which was really cool. So what's if people are listening and they're, let's say we've been in our business for 5 years, 10 years, maybe even some 30 years, and it's ticking along and they're doing it day to day, but they want to ramp things up to a whole new level. It's kind of an open question for you, wherever we go with this, but we want to extend beyond, like maybe the relationship with money is just that it comes and it goes and it comes and it goes and it comes and it goes, and they want to really move things onto a whole nother level. I'd love to hear any thoughts you've got around this.
The hierarchy of your values that I mentioned earlier determine your financial destiny. Gotcha. So if you have a high value, and I'm just going to be strange on this one.
Cool. Strange is good.
If you have a highest value on children's clothes, children's education, children's health, children's entertainment, house, furniture, socializing, travel, shoes, Jimmy Choo shoes. And way down the bottom is maybe working, making money, saving money, and building some investments.
Mm-hmm.
The second you get money, you'll be spending it on your children.
Children, then shoes.
And your house first, and some travel.
Gotcha.
And then if you got some left over, you'll put in shoes, but you'll never get around to saving.
Mm.
The hierarchy of your values dictates how you manage money. And it's not how much you make, it's how you manage it. I consulted with a guy that made $6.29 million 1 year, and at the end of the year had to borrow $327,000 to pay taxes.
Hmm.
I had an assistant that worked for him that made $24,000 to $1,000 a month, just an assistant. And she was saving 20%. So she was going to be closer to financial independence than he ever would, even though he was living an incredible life.
Wow.
He would never have financial independence. Yeah. He would be actively engaged in working to make money. She will actually eventually have her work, money working for her passively. So the first thing is that the hierarchy of your values have to be truly, you have to have a higher value on buying assets that go up in value than consumables and depreciables that go down in value, that become liabilities. If you don't have that, then no matter how much money you make, it's going to be filtered into consumables and lifestyle. Yeah. And many people think that buying a house, for instance, is an investment, but it's actually a lifestyle. So unless you're putting money into assets, now there's another law, we could call it law of entropy, that if you don't take your money at the beginning of the month and put it into investments and have a cushion of savings and then investments that's automated, that's electronically done, that's not emotional, because emotions destroy wealth and strategies build wealth. Electronics do really well. If that's not there, you can guarantee that you'll have unexpected entropic bills come in to erode the potential to save at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't bring order to things, disorder takes it away. So what that means is if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, it fills up with low priority distractions that don't. If you don't put your money into high priority investments first and pay yourself first, the rich have always paid themselves first, they will have unexpected bills erode the possibility of saving at the very end. So you have to have an automated savings and investment process. And my opinion is you want to automate it and accelerate it every quarter if you want to accelerate the growth of your business.
So if you started with a 10% or something and then you accelerate it by adding a couple more percent, is that what you mean?
What you do is I told people that no less than 1%, preferably up to 10%, every quarter you increase the amount you save. And what that does is it forces your business to be more efficient. There's no risk in saving money because the worst thing that can happen is you have the money to pay a bill.
Yeah.
And other than storing it in a money market that's below inflation, that's a possible risk. But the benefit of having liquid capital easily offsets the erosion of it with inflation because you magnetize money to you because money goes where it flows. And if you have more cash on reserve, you have more. Mm. Bill Gates had about $130 billion in cash. Buffett has $112 right now. Apple has $290 billion in cash.
Wow.
So they have cash reserves because they know that people with cash has left emotions. They keep to strategic planning. Mm. They get out of their amygdala because the animal amygdala in the brain doesn't get wealthy. Not too many animals are wealthy. It's humans that do. So humans have foresight and have planning and have the ability to govern themselves. And until you have the ability to govern your emotions, you probably won't build wealth. Mm. You have to have a strategy. You have to have a forced automated savings and investments. You know, you need to know how to use that and leverage that to your advantage. You need to study probabilities and know what means and probabilities of returns are so you can make wise decisions. And it's not going to happen if you don't value it. And if you're not studying it and expecting it to happen, it's not right, not real.
Mm. Powerful. So let's say, well, can someone change their values? Like what if up till this point they've made it, you know, whatever, decent amount of money, but it comes and it goes and it always seems to slip away there, you know, through the cracks. So, okay, cool. I'm going to try and automate it. That's awesome. Like really practical, something we can do.
How do we change our values?
Yeah. And how does someone even before that, it's like, how do we even know what our values are right now? And then how can we like reorganize them if we're spending every week, month crying about the bills are too big and the income's not enough?
How do we say shift? If you're poor, it's because you don't care about humanity.
Okay, interesting.
Because if you really cared about humanity, you'd find out what the needs of humanity are and find out what the needs are and do what you can to directly or indirectly serve the needs.
Yes.
And there's no lack of money because there's no lack of needs.
Yeah. This is beautiful. When it comes to marketing, this is actually probably even more interesting than what I just said.
Everybody has a set of values. Mm-hmm. And that value is going to dictate how they spend their money. And money circulates through the economy from those who value it least to those who value it most. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a low value on building wealth and you have a high value on buying a surfboard.
Yep.
You'll take your money when you get it. You'll buy an extra surfboard and a trip to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, the person you buy that they sell the surfboard to, they may have a high value on having a big office, big business. Mm-hmm. And so they'll buy inventory. And where they buy the inventory, the fiberglass guy that's actually Dick Brewer or whoever's making the mm-hmm. boards, they may have a value on going surfing. So mm-hmm. they're going to put the money in surfing.
Yeah.
They're going to pay hotels.
Pay the hotel and the trip.
And then the hotel airline. Guy is going to say, you know what? I have a little bit higher value on wealth building. And so he sets some of it aside so he can set aside to build, to go from the ground up from a piece of land. Well, the property developer that he gives to, he has a very high value on wealth mm-hmm. building. So he's going to end up with the cash. And he's going to put it into assets. So if money's going to circulate through the economy from those who value it least to those who value it most. And money's going to circulate through the economy to those who have the least order and organization around money to those that have the most.
Mm.
It's also going to go from the ones that care the least about humanity to those that have the most about humanity. Mm. So there are six things that I found common to wealthy billionaires that if a person has found themselves struggling financially, that if they do these six things, it will shift their reality. Number one is to write down literally 200 benefits to yourself of building a business that serves vast numbers of people. Because if you're not going to serve vast numbers of people, you're not going to have vast portions of wealth. Mm-hmm. And if you're not really committed to building the business, you have a delusion on where money's going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it going to come?
So that was building 200 benefits to yourself on a business that serves others.
Yeah. Now these 200 benefits are not, oh, I can go buy that yacht. Oh, I can go buy that big jet ski.
Yeah.
Those are consumables. These are the benefits of actually building a business.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit like learning how to lead people,
mm-hmm.
learning how to engage people in their own values, mm-hmm. learning how to orchestrate and structure priorities. This is the benefits of learning how to build a business. If you don't have the value of that, you won't dedicate to building a business. It won't be on your radar. The second one of the six steps is to 200 benefits of managing the business where it's, you know, efficient and effective and maximizing profits. Because there's people that are out there that have $1 billion business and have a 1% margin,
mm-hmm.
and they're on the edge all the time. And there's other people that have very low cost and have huge margins.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not so much how much you make, it's how much you get to keep. So that's how you manage it. And so if you don't have a value on managing it and understanding the Pareto's principle and Parkinson's law and Ricardo's law of advantages and basic principles of managing time and productivity, then that has to be on your radar and valued. And it has to be you or somebody you're delegating to that wants to run a company. But one of those, somebody has to have that in their company mix to have that company be profitable. The third thing is they have to have 200 benefits of saving an ever-progressive portion of the profits, which drives efficiency up higher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of anybody in the last 35 years or so, 34 years, that I've started on a 4-6 accelerated savings program that hasn't said thank you.
Mm.
Not one.
Yeah.
So if I went into an office and I sat them down and I orchestrated and structured their finances where their taxes are paid, their bills are paid, all by priority, their savings, their future savings, their cash reserves, everything is into buckets properly. And it's orchestrated. Once it's done, you can focus on serving clients. It's electronically done. And
yeah.
you're mediating all the volatilities by structuring it. If you do, I don't know of anybody that's done that that didn't say thank you. Not one in 34 years.
Mm.
Now, once I do that, then the next thing, that's 200 benefits of saving an ever-progressive portion of profits. Then the next one is 200 benefits of increasing leverage, investing in increasing leverage. So learning how to invest and use leverage to your advantage. Either through leverage of borrowing money to leverage, buying real estate, leveraging it with rentals, learning how to go up the scale on stocks to higher volatile stocks that have a little bit more risk and reward ratios.
Mm-hmm.
But you would need to master the art of leverage, building a brand so you can leverage a brand like Donald does. The next one is 200 benefits of accumulating a fortune. Because if you don't have a purpose for doing it, you'll start buying clutter.
Yeah.
You'll get financially independent and go, okay, now what? I just buy stuff.
Yeah.
And that usually eventually traps you. Your vanity's trapped you because now you're carrying around clutter and you're spending money on clutter.
Mm.
And the last one is creating 200 benefits of creating a financial cause that leaves a legacy. So what are you going to do now that you've accumulated? What's next? What are you going to do in the world? Because if you have a bigger cause, you'll drive yourself to continue to grow wealth.
Mm.
But if you don't, you'll just stop at financial security.
Yeah, this is powerful. We see it actually with a lot of businesses we work with. They might have a goal of like their goal was to grow to $5 million in revenue or a couple of million dollars in personal wealth, and they get to it and it's a weird plateau. Yeah, and the motivation's
because they don't have a bigger cause.
Yeah.
And they also don't have it automated to where it's going to continue to grow.
Mm.
So those are six steps to wealth that I've found. Bill Gates built a business to serve vast numbers of people. He and Paul Allen made it efficient, effective to maximize profits. Mm-hmm. They saved a year's worth of liquid capital. Always, they keep a year's worth of liquid capital in reserve, cash. Wow. Then they invested in every degrees of leverage. They ended up accumulating a fortune, and then they created the Bill Gates, Melinda Gates Foundation. Those are common six steps that is essential. And if you have those, if you do those 200 benefits and do not write to any of those benefits cannot be purchasing consumable items. None of those can be about spending.
Yeah.
It has to be about building wealth where it's working for you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So people want to live a quick, immediate, gratifying lifestyle, which is a symptom of not living by your highest values. When people live by their highest values, they have long-term vision. The executive center comes online.
It's not a quick fix of the shoes make me feel good right now or the
the
trip. You're
not living. You're not eating to live. You're eating to live, not living to eat, as they say.
Yeah. Amazing. There's some super amazing insights in there for our listeners. So thank you so much for opening up and sharing this so generously. There's one thing I've heard that you do is you carry a gratitude journal. Or you practice gratitude. If we could just before we wrap up, I'm aware of your time, just share a little bit around that. We're big on gratitude. At Basic Bananas in our main operation, we build into our team weekly meeting, we have a gratitude rock. So someone at a workshop once gave me this Aboriginal hand-painted stone. And what we do at our team meeting, for everyone that's in the office, everyone has to pass, give someone gratitude, say something nice to them. And then they pass it on to someone else and pass it on. So everyone gives and receives gratitude every Friday on our meeting. And the energy of the team, it's like it explodes, you know, or you might say, thank you so much, Joya. Wow. There we go.
I do it every day.
So
I have this is
Dr. DeMartini just flashed at me just for you guys listening. It's he just grabbed his laptop while I was chattering on there, and he just showed me the last line on there was had the opportunity to be interviewed by Christo Hall from The Pick of the Bunch. So as gratitude, so
it's current.
It's current. It's rolling
every day.
Right now.
I have a 4,000-page document on just gratitude. This is volume 21, and there's 23 volumes in all.
Amazing.
So everything I have the opportunity to do. I document as something I can be grateful for.
Amazing.
So I do that. So I have the largest collection of gratitudes of anybody ever met.
I could, I'm not going to argue with that. Can you pick that apart real quickly? Just like why and what do you do? Just so.
Every interview I get to do. Today I got to do a donation to a charity and I got that and they sent a thank you and I put the thing in there.
Nice.
I had an interview. The ABC, and I had another interview, another podcast this morning. I had a webinar. I had a talk last night. I had a meeting with a person over in Lithuania, another one in London. So whatever I get to do, I document it on that day. Every time I get the opportunity, I do a lot of articles, between 40 and 70 articles a month. And so every time I produce an article and send it off, I document that I had the opportunity to write that article. Or if somebody gives me a testimonial from some presentation or whatever, some real tear-jerking testimonials come in. I put that in there. So nice. Anything I get to do in a day, pretty well, that's other than eat, I may not put it. If I get to eat with somebody, I'll put that down.
Nice, yeah.
But anything I get to do, it's a journal of everything I get to do that I'm grateful for. And I found the best wording is had the opportunity to meet this person, do this, have this opportunity, that kind of thing. So I do that every day. I document every day. I was born on Thanksgiving Day, and my mom told me to if I count my blessings, I'll have more blessings to count.
Wow. What you think about and thank about? So that was one from you?
Whatever you think about and think about, you tend to bring it up.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a very powerful statement, one that I've remembered. Whatever you think about and think about, you tend to bring about. which is beautiful. I think we've had sometimes we'll have business owners, they're overwhelmed and things. It's like, hey, let's have a quick celebration of something we've done in the last month. You know, what have you done? Just to try and bring up a little thing they're grateful for, or they got a new customer, or something happened. And it tends to change the atmosphere pretty much on the spot.
It does. When you see the hidden order in your apparent chaos, you spontaneously have grace. When things support your values more than challenge it, you have a superficial gratitude. But that's not the profound grace that occurs when you see the hidden order inside why things are happening, even when they seem to be challenging you. When you can discover the hidden order and see that there's both sides of every event and find the meaning and extract meaning out of the event, an inner grace occurs. That's the gratitude that you want to document. Because what you're doing is you're training yourself to see how whatever's happening is on the way, not in the way. And the gratitude is that type of gratitude is the key that opens up the gateway of the heart. Inside the heart, some people say, is love. Mm. And love, metaphorically, if not realistically, radiates out like light. Window washes the mind, brings inspiration to the mind and enthusiasm to the body. It reduces the volatilities of emotion. It allows you to be present and certain in your objective.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for being so generous with all of your information and sharing. This has been amazing. I'd love to know what's up next for you. What about someone like, actually, just before I even dive into what's next, someone like yourself, like it's just like I look at what you're up to and your doc you're working on and the amount of books you've consumed and volumes of books in the, what was it again? 30,151. A real sense of purpose. Like you seem to have this clear purpose. It's everything's rolling. And I guess you see it's aligned with your values, so you see it as fun. Is there any guilty pleasures in there that you sneak in where you go, oh, cool, now that I've got a break, I run off and go and do this thing? Or what's the, what do you do? Any sneak off and have a guilty pleasure here and there, something?
No, what I do, I don't drink because I haven't had a drink. I think I had one glass of wine in 45 years. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I haven't had a drug in my body for 45 years, not even an aspirin or a painkiller. I eat wisely.
You appear very healthy.
For 64, I think I'm doing pretty good.
For 64, you're doing exceptionally well.
I have agendas that I keep every day that I have publicists and directors and consulting schedulers and everything else. And I have a hierarchy of things that I want to have done in a day. Mm-hmm. They know what it is. They coordinate it, so I don't have to think about it. And then they get this to me sometimes multiple times in a day and update it. And then what I do is I just follow it. And I just do it. And I want to research, write, travel, teach. Those are the four things I love doing.
Nice.
So I spend most of my time traveling the world, various hotels, or I live on a ship called the World that travels around the world. So I'm either on there researching and writing, on my way traveling to teach, or I'm on a flight somewhere to hotels. Because yeah. I basically committed my life at age 17, 18 to do what I'm doing today.
Wow. And that, I imagine you sleep well at night knowing, delivering, you know, the tons of value and reaching so many people. The amount of countries you've presented in, there was some fascinating
thing. I've been 63 with the Breakthrough Experience, which is one of my signature programs.
Yeah.
But I've been to 141 countries.
141 countries presented in 63.
I presented it more, but just that one program is in 63.
Wow. Okay. Impressive.
Yeah, 63 for that one program, the Breakthrough Experience. I've done that 1,033 times.
Wow. Awesome.
That one program.
So what's next for you? Obviously, it's doing this and delivering this. How does, if someone wants to learn more about you, where do they go? What's your plan? What are you rolling
with? The easiest way to go and find me is to go on drdemartini.com, drdemartini.com.
Awesome.
That website is filled with valuable information. You could just study. There's hundreds of articles, radio, television, newspapers, magazines, YouTube. And also there's a value determination process that's complementary there. So whoever's listening, please take 30 minutes or so of your time to go through and go online, go to that website, go go to the value determination and actually fill it out. It's private. No one will ever see it except you. But fill out a 13-step questionnaire to help you determine what's really important to you, what your life demonstrates, not what you fantasize about. Because the magnificence of who you truly are is far greater than any fantasies you'll impose on yourself. And identifying objectively what your values are, it will help you set priorities. It'll help you not go on distractions as easily. It'll help you value yourself. And when you value, so does the world. So go to the website and take advantage of that. That's a complimentary thing that will be worth doing multiple times as you're evolving through your life.
Definitely. And related to a lot of what we've gone through in this episode and what you've shared.
It will definitely help. Yeah. I have a book also that could be helpful to people. There's lots of CDs on there if you go to the products. But there's a book on there called The Values Factor. So if anybody was interested in the application of values, that book by Penguin is a really nice book that I did on just value applications.
Awesome. The Values Factor. Yeah. And that's on drdmartini.com. We'll also post the link to this on the show notes on basicbananas.com. And also, if you're listening on any of the podcast applications, it'll be in the show notes on your phone. So you'll find links to the website, which includes all those resources on there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been very valuable and definitely a different style of episode to a lot of our episodes. And so a lot of meaningful insights and some practical tools that our listeners can take away. And myself, this has been brilliant.
So. Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with your audience. And whoever is listening out there, when you're going to bed at night and when you get up in the morning, think about what you did accomplish. And in the morning, think about your priorities and make sure you're getting down to the highest priority actions you can do to fulfill what you dream about. And then give yourself permission to do something extraordinary on planet Earth.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
To get more from Basic Bananas and to learn new ways to grow your business with clever marketing, visit basicbananas.com.